Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important segment of our society. To those of you who have come to realize that every religious institution, all politics, academics, military, and media institutions are corrupt, and that all of these things have become counterproductive. None of them can be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to join us in this discussion, which will begin with our final segment on Yaukanan, John 3, leading to 3:16, so that people understand how utterly stupid, utterly ridiculous, utterly mean they are being, deadly, when they hold up a sign saying John 3:16. Our phone number, if you'd like to join Kirk and I in this review, is 877-376-45. In our second hour, we'll be discussing the deadly nature of the religion of Islam. Why do you suppose that I would say they're being stupid, mean, deadly by holding up a sign saying John 3:16?
Well, at best is out of context, and if you know, God just, Yahweh just hates people to lead his children astray.
I mean,
that's, and all of this, I did a review last night, because there's so much material, I tried to go point by point on what we had discussed and what we've discovered, and it's just a death blow to Christianity.
It is from beginning to end. So if you cite a passage as if this is the foundation, this is the simplistic summation. In fact, this would be the simplistic summation, John 3:16, the simplistic summation of your religion and your plan of salvation, and you quote it out of context to give and quote it not only out of context, but change the words.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say believe.
No.
Then what you have done is you've taken this very systematic approach to not trusting men, not trusting their witness, recognizing you have to start with the family, the covenant family, recognizing that the means to the covenant family is the set-apart spirit, and goes all the way through this review of the Torah's presentation of how we engage in a relationship with Yahweh, and chastises this man who claims to be Torah observant for not knowing this, because God gave us the capacity to do it and gave us the testimony to review. And if you ignore all of that, which speaks against the conclusion you're drawing, and then hold up a sign with a errant translation of John 3:16, anybody that believes you will be irrevocably harmed. So you say that you have put together a list, and you know we learned a lot. I was even surprised as to how much we were able to glean with an open mind and with the perspective being the Torah. If we have Yahweh's and Yosha's perspective, how much we could learn.
Well, it just kept going on. Well, it's not that big a list, but it's quite a lot of material. And though I put it very briefly, I even remembered that that you had done quite a review on this in Yada Yah, and starting with Hosha. But the list that I came up with was pretty straightforward, and just briefly, here's some of the things, and you jump in and correct me when I'm wrong.
By the way, I just figured that out as well. That and I knew that I had reviewed this, but I thought that all I had done was, since it was the Greek text, and the Greek text is so unreliable and so deprived of real nuggets that you can study, unlike the Hebrew.
Yeah.
I had just written a more accurate translation, but now I have seen that indeed, after writing that translation, I did go into some detail. But in all fairness, for anybody that would turn, it's in the Ruach, the Spirit chapter of the Going Astray volume of YadaYah.com. In my defense, and I think I probably need one, I wrote, this was the first book that I wrote on Yah's testimony. and my ability to translate, my ability to analyze, my perspective, my growth, my understanding, you know, all the things that help you through the process. I was at the, this was 10 years ago, so I was at a pretty naive stage at that point in my my life. I was just beginning this voyage of discovery. So I just ask our listeners, if they go to it and read this, to recognize that, you know,
come a long way, baby.
We've come a long way. We've come a long way since those days.
Yes.
We were just at the beginning of a great ride. All right. So why don't you go ahead?
Okay. No, I was going to say just as a little precursor to it, you started out with a quote by Hosea, and even though the Messiah is talked about, you know, all through Isaiah, and Daniel tells you when he's going to show up, and we've been reviewing things on Friday about what Dod said, you know, and so forth. So there were four things that Hosea said that kind of set everything up. He said he's going to come from the wilderness.
Yes.
He's going to confound the Yehudim.
Yes. Which are the Jews, the Israelites.
Yes. He's going to be disapproved and treated shamefully.
Yes.
And Yehosha, as a result of their decision, they will basically self-destruct because they reject him. So,
yeah. In fact, there's another aspect, if I may add one other thing to Hosea that I think is maybe generally. What you've done is you've given specifics as to how the Israelites were going to respond to him, and Nicodemus is no exception. What I wanted to share was what the very heart of the discussion here is, it's the Torah, stupid. And the reason that you're not going to experience eternal life is because you've rejected the Torah. And so in Hosea 4:6, Yahweh says that my children, which would be the children of Israel, are destroyed for their lack of knowing. And he says because they have neglected his Torah, he's going to neglect their children. And that because of their neglect of his Torah, they could no longer serve as his ministers. And so what were the Israelites doing when they rejected Yahusha?
Well, they were defending their religion.
Against their, the Torah.
Against the Torah. They were destroying. Yeah, absolutely.
They were positioning their oral law against Yahweh's Torah, is what they were doing. And because their oral law did not allow a corporeal expression of Yahweh, he had to be rejected.
Despite the fact that he told Moshe and all of them, you know, I'm going to send you a softer voice because you obviously can't take me in the way I am. So I'm going to
Exactly. Right in the middle of the Torah. Yahweh says, I understand that you don't like me with the big booming voice and the brilliant light. So I will send someone who is a prophet, you know, akin to Moshe, that will speak to you next. And, of course, that is Yahusha. But throughout this, Yahusha has equated himself to the Torah. And in Hosea, what we find is that Yisrael is essentially torn asunder, and humankind is torn asunder because they have neglected, they're not knowledgeable regarding the Torah. And, you know, Pauline Christianity, what's its fulcrum? What is the premise of Pauline Christianity?
The
Torah.
Yeah, the Torah.
Yeah, no longer applies. It's been
annulled. Just a treasure, cannot save. It cannot save, what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and the second thing is that the Torah can't save, that the Torah has been annulled, and that the second aspect of it, falls into this idea it's specific, that the covenant in the Torah is enslaves.
Yeah.
This very family of God that Yahusha is speaking about, that according to Paul, it enslaves, which is why Paul created a New Testament.
Now, the fact that he said, I saved you out of Mizraim, the house of slavery,
right.
Duh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So why don't we go ahead and start the list? We'll the music will start here in a couple of minutes, but then we'll continue after the break.
Oh, okay. We know that he observed the Passover.
Ah, yes. Says that specifically. He was in town for Passover.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm just looking at little death blows.
If Yosha observed the Passover and you claim to be a follower, you don't even know his name. You call him Jesus Christ, and neither of those are even remotely accurate. Yeah, or Lord, which is Satan's title. Yeah, Baal. If you claim to be a follower and you don't know his name and you don't do what he did, aren't you just lying to yourself? I mean, isn't Christianity just this big hypocritical lie where they claim that they're engaged in the religion of Jesus Christ, they're following Jesus Christ, they don't know his name, and they don't do anything that he did. In fact, they absolutely reject what he did. If you went into a Christian church and said, you know, this year instead of Easter, we're going to celebrate Passover, unyeasted bread, matzah, and bakutim, first fruits, they'd run you out of town. They said, we're not Jewish.
Yeah. How dare you?
How dare you?
That was nailed to the tree.
Right. Therefore, Christianity is a hypocritical lie. All Christians are lying to themselves and to one another.
But how many times do you hear, what would Jesus do?
They'd celebrate Passover.
Yeah.
What he did.
Okay. Well, let's not get the truth in the way of a good party.
Of a good religion, huh? All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so number one is pretty well. You know, by the way, this is a debate here between Christianity and Yosha, that one blow is pervasive. Yeah. It's already over. Yeah. You can't recover when your religion is diametrically opposed to to God's example and teaching. So it's already let's put a few more nails on the coffin.
Yeah, what the heck. And we also know we're discovering that Yahweh saving us is Yahweh.
Yes.
Is Yahweh saving us, and he is Yahweh, and the Torah is Yahweh.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting that the name that was changed to Jesus was not written out in any of these Greek texts. The first four centuries of Greek texts, all of them used placeholders, identical to the placeholders that were used in the Septuagint, which was the first Greek translation of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, because the Greek alphabet cannot transliterate, replicate the sounds of the Hebrew names like Yahweh and Yosha. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're reviewing the death blows to Christianity that are provided in the preamble to John 3:16. And the first of those is that it says, now while he was in Jerusalem, which means the source from which reconciliation flow, at the Passover feast, he was celebrating Passover. In fact, he would become the Passover lamb. The second is Yosha's name. Just prior to that, it says, then the Israelite means individuals who engage and endure with God, demanded of him, what miraculous sign will you show us to prove your authority to do all of this? Yosha answered them and said, destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days. Yosha, the realization is, dear Christian, you have been lied to. Every time you see Jesus, every time you see Christ in your English Bible and you hold up your English translation as if it were the inerrant word of God, you are not only showing that you're ignorant of the truth, but you're continuing to promote a lie. 100% of the time that Yosha, which is the mission statement and the identity designation of the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. It means Yahweh saves. It's a combination of Yahweh, of Yahweh, and Yasha, the Hebrew word for to save, the verb to save. That 100% of the time that the name was written in any first, second, third, or mid-fourth century manuscript, it was written using the same placeholder system that was originally devised in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Torah that was so popular at that time. And the reason that the placeholders were used is because you cannot replicate Hebrew names in Greek. And they're all in defiance of Greek grammar rules. Both Yahusha and Yahweh would be feminine in Greek. That's why they changed the name and you get Jesus to make it masculine. So the names were preserved by the use of these placeholders. You could go to the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and find these placeholders in the Septuagint and look at the Hebrew names that underlie them. And that's the truth. As it relates to Yahusha's name, it is written 220 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, including the time when the Torah was given to Moshe, Yahusha was there. So there is no question about this. And the moment you know his name, Christianity ceased to exist as a religion. Because it's that very God of your dreaded Torah and Old Testament that is doing the saving. There is no Trinity. Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. He's a diminished manifestation set apart from Yahweh. There is no Trinity. You have been deceived. And the truth is available for you. You just haven't cared enough to bother to find it.
If God says he's one, he's one.
Right.
Three.
If he says, Yahweh is my name, it's the only name that I want to be called and remembered as, mentioned as, my only name, and he uses that name. How many times did he write his names in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Amazingly, 7,000 times.
Exactly. And every one of those times, dear Christian, your religious institutions have felt that they had the authority to change God's name and to replace it with the satanic title, the Lord. You've been played for a fool. In fact, you've even paid them to play you for a fool. All right, so that's the second point, is they've screwed up the name, and the name tells you everything you need to know. The name in and of itself completely destroys Christianity.
And if you look at it in the original language, which he said, don't change a jot and a tittle, that means
right.
Don't change the language, which changed like four or five times. If you
right. Don't even change the letters that they
the Torah
has written.
No.
Right.
And we've done that, they've done that, we've done that.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story, and it spells it out in the letters. A child could look at the symbols.
You
could be illiterate, and you could tell by the symbols.
Yeah. What Kirk is talking about here is the fact that the original alphabet, the first alphabet ever used by humankind, for the first copy of the Torah, the original autograph, was written using a pictographic alphabet. And the purpose of the pictographic alphabet is that every word is defined by the pictures of the letters that comprise the words. And so, as you say, a child can understand precisely what Yahweh was talking about. You don't have to know Hebrew to look at the Torah in the original alphabet that it was written to understand each and every word. So, there you are, including Yahusha's name. It's Yahweh's name plus two letters. He is the living word of Yahweh, the Shem. He is a visible manifestation of Yahweh, the A. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Well, it's not in this particular list, Kirk. The name Christian is based on just a whole sea of lies. Is Christ ever written out in any first, second, third, or fourth century manuscript of the so-called Christian New Testament?
No, they wouldn't. Well, if you knew Greek, you wouldn't use it anyway. But I mean, I've seen all these placeholders in this second and third century manuscripts. I mean, you're not making that up. I've seen them long before I met you.
I'd encourage anybody to look. So you also knew that these names were made up, and you found the proof. When you looked at, in fact, Philip Comfort has the book. It's called The Text of the Earliest Greek Manuscripts, the NT. And in that book, he has the 69, it's now 70 manuscripts that have been unearthed. And of those 70 manuscripts, neither the basis for, if you can just laugh about it and say Jesus or Christ, is written out. There's placeholders that are used, and the placeholders are designed to point you to the actual Hebrew name and title. Christ, which would be based on Christo, Christo, Christu, Christoon, depending on the application of the grammar. It's based on a Greek word, chrysos, that Yosha uses to speak about the application of drugs to one's eyes. It means to drug.
It's very funny.
I mean, yeah, it's really funny. In fact, the rokai that you see, the RX that's in front of pharmacies, drugstores, it's based on this Greek word. Chryso means to apply drugs. If you call yourself a Christian, you're a person who is drugged. And what's really funny, too, is that they butchered the placeholder, because the placeholder was actually based upon Christus, not Christos. Christos, I and O, as opposed to E and U. Christos versus Christus. Christus is a worthy and capable servant who is engaged in a noble cause. It's an implement doing an important task and doing it well. And so it is at least a reasonable attempt to translate the work aspect of Maaseiah. Maaseiah is a combination of Yahweh's name and Maaseh, which is to work, to be an implement, accomplishing something. And so they even pick the wrong fill-in letters, and then they call themselves that. So they're calling themselves drugged. And was Yosha Greek?
No.
Did he speak Greek?
No.
Did he have a Greek name?
No, he didn't sound like a Greek either.
No. Did he have a Greek title?
No, sir.
So how can he be Christ?
He ain't.
He ain't. He just isn't. I mean, come on, folks. You've been hoodwinked. Wink. If, you know, Christian, if your religious leaders and businesses and pastors have consistently lied to you about every important aspect of your religion, why do you pay them? Why do you give devotions to them? Why do you trust them? Why do you spend any time around them? Why don't you denounce them? Seems like the reasonable thing to do.
It's easy for me now, I tell you, but you got to be armed with the right information, because otherwise you just stay drugged.
Yeah, and I'll have an open mind. Okay, so we've gone through the first two. What's the third?
Well, we got some biggies coming up. We got the Torah is not law, it's teaching. Everything about this passage, he talked about teaching and teaching and teaching.
Yeah, and by the way, he tells you that it's in the Torah, because he's telling you, he says, you're a teacher, and what does Torah mean?
Torah means teaching, it means guidance, it means instruction.
Yeah. Right. Yahweh himself, Yahweh authored the Torah, so we're going to turn to him to define the term. When he introduces the concept of Torah, he says that it's based on the verb Yara.
Yara.
The same verb that is Yerusalem. Yerusalem is Yara plus Shalom, which Shalom means reconciliation. Yara. He defines the verb yara, used throughout the Torah prophets, it's a very common Hebrew verb, means to teach. And he says, so his Torah is based upon yara, to teach. And so he refers to, he's referred to as an expression of teaching. His miracles are the quality of his teaching. He is walking out of the pages of the teaching. Yosha directs our attention to the fact that Nicodemus claimed to be a teacher of the Torah. And he also says, you've got to turn to Moshe. That's where you're going to find the presentation of God's family, the covenant. And so all through here, the Torah is equated to teaching, the very place that God teaches us about his family.
Law don't teach you nothing.
Just be
afraid.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Is there a Hebrew word for law? If there is, I'm unaware of it.
Oh, I think you can probably find something like compel or something like that, but there's that you would use in regardless, you know, in natural.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even sure, because there is no word in Hebrew for obey. And there are prescriptions, there are directions, there are inscribed recommendations.
It's always volitional as well. It's never never like you must do this or die instantly. I mean, it's this is a choice.
Yeah.
Choose to follow this path, you know.
Yeah, I would say that one of the great lies of Christendom is, and it's also Judaism, of changing Torah, which God himself authored and he himself defined as instruction, as teaching. And changing that to law is maybe the single greatest perversion in both religions in terms of misleading. Because then Paul says, well, the law has been annulled. The law has been replaced with the gospel of grace. Well, if you translated Torah correctly, and instead of changing Torah to law to teaching and guidance, then Paul sounds like a nincompoop.
Yeah.
That the teaching and guidance has been replaced, it's been replaced by belief. Then you say, oh, so you really want me to be stupid? You know, when you realize that teaching and guidance has now been replaced by belief and faith, then you recognize that Paul says, you know, I don't really have a very good argument, so I just want you to believe me.
No, no.
So that's devastating to Christianity. You're
yeah,
right.
If you put it, but you have to know it does not mean law. I mean, if you can convince somebody, it means law, but... another death blow.
Another death blow.
Mm-hmm. And now another is
yes.
Yahweh or Yahusha doesn't like religious people, in particular religious leaders, and the primary reason, because they steal you away from him, and he calls him a moron.
He is really, he says, what's the matter with you? How come you don't know this? I mean, you're masquerading as a teacher and you don't even know where to find this information. You're asking me this question and you've got no clue. And then he explains it to him and said, you still don't understand. I'm explaining it to you. I'm telling you where to look. And you still don't understand. Yeah, he is, he's miffed.
Oh, yeah.
He's disgusted, to tell you the truth.
Move along. I know it's a short show, but we move along a bit. We talked a lot about the souls and so forth, and we discovered that the soul is just like the body. It will die.
And, flesh. You're born of flesh, so you're born with a soul, and it's flesh to flesh, man. It's and we know the flesh is material, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. He always explained that, and he says you're born of water. It's your mortal birth, which is you have your soul. And unless you're born a spirit, it just dissipates into nothing as it decomposes.
Yeah, so unless it is born again from above or...
spiritually.
Or born from below, it will not continue on. That's the only way.
Yeah, so you're not going to see little Aunt Susie up there in the pearly gates.
No, so the three things that happen to a soul the two things that can happen to a soul in Christianity is incorrect teaching.
That's
three
correct.
Things that can happen.
Right.
The
majority of souls just simply cease to exist flesh to flesh. They're never born of spirit.
Which is not a punishment. Which is hard. Correct. Which makes it a little bit easier to realize when you have relatives that have passed on. They're not suffering. Because of choice.
Yeah, correct.
Chooses who he will. If you're not interested in him, he's not interested in you. He's not going around saving all the little children people. If they're not interested, you walk away, even if it's your parents who walked your way first and kept perpetuating the same myth.
Yeah. This is really a challenging topic because you get all around free will, but... there is a distinct possibility that almost no one finds Yahweh or gets to know him or engages in a relationship with him, that Yahweh hasn't chosen somehow to reveal himself to. And that's just what he says, that the set-apart spirit goes about making the choices as to who she wishes to engage with. And that's he's not compelling those people to engage in a relationship with him. So we still have free will. And because he is infinite in time, he knows who's going to respond favorably. Who Yahweh, through his set-apart spirit, can approach that will respond favorably and that will choose to learn who he is, will choose to be Torah observant, will examine what he has to say, will care about what he has to say. But the fact is, he chooses. And it's very, very, according to the second statement of the Etchin Stone, it's thousands amongst billions, so it's one in a million.
Yeah. We, in this same passage, it's pretty obvious that maybe a little bit redundant, but it's very obvious it's one covenant and only one covenant. He's talking about the way he said,
you don't know where to find the family of God. He didn't say the families, did he?
No.
As a matter of fact, the very fact that he was talking about that you have to be part of the family of God to be saved. And he told him where to look for the family of God, which is the covenant in the Torah. At this point, there was no New Testament, was there? In fact, there still isn't. But even from a Christian perspective, there was no New Testament. And Nicodemus absolutely would never have been chastised for not knowing that God had changed his mind and come up with a different plan. That's not what Yosha's saying. He's not saying, hey, there's a different plan. Yeah, you know all about that covenant in the Torah, but forget that. I've got a different plan. He didn't say that. In fact, he said just the opposite. He said the one and only, the family of God, is presented there in the Torah. Wow.
Yeah,
that's you have completely annulled any possibility of a New Testament based upon Yosha's presentation of the family of God in John 3. That may be as brutal a blow to Christianity as anything we've discussed so far. But, of course, to appreciate that, you have to think. You know, I hadn't considered that, Kirk, but you're absolutely right. The way that Yosha talks about the family of God, singular, and where to look for the family of God, and he's talking to a fellow that claimed to be an expert on the Torah, and then he references Moshe, there is a 0% possibility then that he is equating salvation and eternal life to a New Testament based on faith. Zero. Now, to trust and rely upon the Son in John 3:16, you've got to know who the Son is and what the Son is talking about and how Yahweh went about providing eternal life through His Son. Now you've got to you're put in a position. Yosha himself has put you in a position where you've got to think these things through and understand them to benefit, because he's just said, there is no salvation through faith in the gospel of grace. There is no New Testament. Wow, devastating. What next do you have on your list?
I thought it was quite interesting that doesn't leave any stone unturned. He's got the upright pole, not a pagan cross, because he's speaking of obviously his Passover doorway, but I mean he refers to the Moshe and the pole with the snake on it. So I mean, you know, if you miss that symbolism, then but there is no up there. There's the upright pole, not the pagan cross. I mean,
that's pretty powerful, because the symbol of Christianity is the cross. You're saved through the cross, and of course, there was no cross.
Mm-hmm.
It was an upright pole, and the upright pole was in the form of a capital a T, not the lowercase T that is the Christian sign. And there's only one aspect of it that Yahweh ever refers to as he did in this passage, which is the upright pole. Moshe lifted up the upright pole. The upright pole is the vertical post of the door frame of the door of Passover. It's the Edon of the Torah. Every time Edon is used in the Torah, it speaks of the upright pillar of the tabernacle, which both increases the size of, lifts the roof of, and secures the household of God. And so Yosha is the upright one. He is the Edon, the upright pillar of the tabernacle. So the Edon, he actually equates to destroy this temple in 3 days. I will, lift it back up. And so that's the whole concept of the upright pillar. The whole notion of the Christian cross is it's pagan. It derives from the sun crossing the constellation of Taurus, the bull, and of Tammuz in Babylon. And it's it's a pagan symbol that predates Christianity by, you know, 2,000 years.
And if you want to go even a little bit further back in their thinking, that was the center post, the most sturdy post that holds up the household, the tent, mm-hmm. you know, for the household. So, I mean, every symbol is just didn't miss a trick. I mean, if you pay attention, you cannot draw other right. conclusions.
Subtleties everywhere. That's kind of the way that Yahweh talks throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the more thoughtful you are, the closer, you know, to observe means to closely examine and carefully consider. The more observant you are, the more closely you examine, the more carefully you consider, the more you learn.
I was going to throw in one other little thing that came out of Hosea. It starts out with that the spirit comes out of the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little research on wilderness and wilderness and the to the old nomadic herdsmen, Hebrews, they considered the wilderness, I think of it as kind of being wild because it starts out with the word wild, but to them it was nature, and nature is organized, and just as they think of the wind that blows down a path and continues, trade winds and so forth, and the moon goes from this place to that place and the sun, to them it's all organized. They think of the wilderness as a place where it's in perfect balance, and a city where man makes what man makes, that's where the chaos is.
Yeah.
So he came, you know, so I don't know. I may be stretching there, but that's where.
Yeah, okay.
But in any case.
Certainly Yahweh has never condemned the wilderness.
No.
He always condemns places like Sodom and Gomorrah for the decadence that exists in those kinds of places in Babylon.
In Babylon,
so
yeah.
Yeah, it's cities that he condemns, not these other places. Wow. My guess is you've still got more on your list, and we'll have to continue this. This was really profound. There's so many things here that I didn't even come to appreciate in our many days of reviewing this, and all of them are valuable. Kirk, marvelous job. Thank you.
I'll catch you soon.
Okay. Appreciate it, friend.
Yes, sir.